It's good to be here. I just got in from Washington, D.C. I didn't know how many people would be here. I have a few brochures about genetically engineered food. If you're with any organization, please take one of these because you're absolutely free to copy them. It's a very good readable synopsis of the kinds of questions that we need to raise about what I call virtual food for virtual people. Now, the World Trade Organization, as you've learned, is trying to force this technology down the throats of the whole global population. And what does this mean for the future? I'm going to give you a synopsis here, as soon as we get the slides up and going, about where this technology is taking us. Well, welcome to the genetic age. Since Crick and Watson in the United Kingdom split the genetic code showing the double helix, venture capitalists moved in very quickly. We can improve upon nature. This is the hubris of the dominator mode of being human. In the book of Genesis, it says that we have dominion over the rest of creation. The original root meaning of dominion doesn't mean to dominate and control and exploit. It comes from the Hebrew verb yarad, which means to come down to have communion with. It's an injunction to compassionate custodianship of God's creation. But we have another form of human being that I call homo technos, technocratic man, that has the arrogance to believe that we can improve upon nature and commoditize life. Through the World Trade Organization and TRIPS, the trade-related intellectual property, new life forms are being patented. This is the game of Monopoly. When I was a kid, I learned to play Monopoly, but I stopped playing because when my peers started winning, I saw how they behaved. They became greedy. They became insatiable. But in the real world, it's pretty creepy. Now, there are some areas of genetic engineering biotechnology that could be used well. Basically, all technology is neutral. For example, we can develop from certain crops edible vaccines. My wife has a project in India. In many third world countries, there's no adequate refrigeration. But you can produce bananas and spinach and foods like that that can, in fact, contain beneficial vaccines, oral vaccines. That's one approach. DNA probes for checking new diseases. A lot of you have cats, and your cats have feline leukemia virus vaccine that's been genetically engineered. We're not sure yet how safe these are, but they seem to be working well. Now, Monsanto popped out first with some of the new transgenic crops that produce insecticides, and these are two tomato plants. Caterpillar surprised. The tomato plant at left was stripped by caterpillars at Monsanto's lab in St. Louis, but the plant at right, with an inserted gene, produced a toxin that repelled the pests. Wonderful. Poisonous plants. Field performance of elite transgenic maize plants expressing the insecticidal protein from a bacillus, Bacillus thuringiensis. They found that some crops now producing this BT toxin produce 20 to 30 times more than was expected. Now, let's just back up a bit. Agricultural spokespeople are saying that 50% of the field crops in the United States next year will be genetically engineered. 50%. About 60% of the processed foods that you eat today contain some ingredients of genetically engineered crops. How do they get the genes in to these crops? Well, they put them in especially using virus vectors. A popular one is the cabbage mosaic virus. The virus infects the whole plant, so it's already infected. It's possible that these virus particles that are used to carry genes into the plant can recombine with what is called endogenous viruses in the plants to create entirely new plant diseases. There is evidence that after the plants die, the BT toxin accumulates in certain soils. When we start killing the microorganisms in the soil, we have dead soil. We have no nutrients. Some researchers are even putting spider venom genes into plants and scorpion venom genes, experimenting to produce crops that will be patented to resist all kinds of insects. Here we have future pest control. This is supported with your tax dollars. Predatory mite that could be genetically modified to improve its ability to feed on spider mites. I'll tell you about this in a minute. Now just imagine when you have these plants that are producing their own insecticides synthetically put into them. These insecticides are not specific for certain insect, in quotes, pests. First of all, you talk to any organic farmer. You create insect pests when you have these huge monocultures of corn and soybean, primarily to raise and fatten chickens and pigs and so on, so we eat more meat. When you have this situation that it's all kinds of insects that are being killed, you're wiping out beneficial insects. You're also destroying a food source for birds and other creatures. You're affecting the whole food chain. The end result will be biological wastelands. We have plants being produced now, crops being produced that produce their own insecticide and that are resistant, as you know, to various herbicides, such as glyphosate, the Roundup Ready soybeans of Monsanto. Novartis has some, Zeneca has some. So there's going to be more herbicide use as well. Killing weeds, other plants in other words, that used to be food for other creatures. So what are we doing? We are on the threshold of creating biological deserts. Very serious. Now in the late 80s, these major companies, Pioneer, Shell, Sandoz, Pfizer, Upjohn, Ciba-Geigy, the drug companies and the petrochemical companies started buying up all the small seed companies. This is your game of monopoly. So that then available to the farmers would only be their particular seeds, that they were on the threshold of genetic engineering and patenting. So this is monopoly par excellence. This is good strategy. Now, you know, the ultimate monopoly is to sell seeds to farmers that won't germinate unless the farmer buys a chemical cocktail to stimulate the germination process, or plants that will germinate but have no immune system until the farmer buys a particular chemical cocktail to put on. Or if you sell him, in quotes, normal seeds and the seeds don't germinate, that's a Terminator 1 technology. That they're not going to germinate if he stores any of the seeds. And this is the kind of mindset behind the game of monopoly and total control of the food system that the World Trade Organization is aiding and abetting that should really make us deeply concerned. Of course, they say this is the only way to feed the hungry world. This is the only way to feed the hungry world with agricultural biotechnology. Now, Charles Benbrook, an agronomist, came out with a report a couple of weeks ago. He did a study of the U.S. soybean crop. The genetically engineered crops are less productive per acre than conventional crops. So they are less productive. Lapay and a co-researcher have found that the genetically engineered soybeans have less of the beneficial phytoestrogens that help stop breast cancer and other health-related problems. So these crops are not doing so good. The more research that we do, the more flawed they are. What kind of research and development is going on? Herbicide resistance, insect resistance, various trait qualities, virus resistance, and so on. And these are the kind of biological deserts of agribusiness, the huge monocultures, where this technology is being applied. You have big processing plants in the acreage. So the big question is, what is going to happen to the soil microorganisms? Now, I speak for the rights of animals and all creatures. A lot of human beings feel that we are the most intelligent, therefore our rights go above everybody else's. Some animal rights philosophers say whales are more sentient than mice, therefore we should be more concerned about protecting whales than mice. The least sentient are in the soil, the little bacteria, the molds, the fungi, the microscopic little insect-like creatures. Now, if you try to value them in terms of their intelligence, you're on the wrong path. That's a human-centered or anthropocentric path. You should look at them in terms of what they give to life. And those little organisms, and I have a spoonful of forest soil here, and there's about 4 billion little organisms in that teaspoonful. They give more to the earth than all of us in this room, because they are part of the process of symbiogenesis, of recycling and recreating life, making the humus. Now, we're human. Remember the etymology. Human, humus of the earth. Therefore, we should be humble. We should have humility. Where is the humility in this technology? The soil is becoming toxic. A major problem with conventional foods today is because of the use of synthetic chemicals, potassium, nitrogen, ammonia, and so on. The microorganisms are being destroyed. The soils are deficient in trace nutrients, trace minerals. So we have trace mineral deficiency diseases in the animals and in the humans that eat them. So take your multi-mineral supplements tomorrow, if not today, because many of our soils are seriously depleted. And this biotechnology is not going to improve it at all. Although Monsanto was talking about nutraceuticals, about nutritionally enhanced foods that they're going to market yet. Very soon. Very questionable. Why not eat a diverse, balanced, organic diet? We don't need nutraceutical foods. Now remember, just a few years ago, the petrochemical pharmaceutical industry was selling pesticides left, right, and center and saying that they were safe. This is an ad from Time magazine in 1949, 1950. It says, DDT is good for me. And look at the little Susie housewife. Look at the baby. It's good for the home. She's nursing her baby there. Yay, we dwell in ignorance. But we've moved on a bit now. We know that these chemicals become concentrated in the breast fat and are secreted in the milk and are affecting the babies. The dioxins is part of the food chain too. Eat lower on the food chain, you concentrate less dioxins. Pretty scary. But the chemical industry said these things are safe. The chemical industry is now morphed into genetic engineering biotechnology, moving away from the age of chemistry into the age of biotechnology. And they're saying the same thing. It's good for you. We're doing it all for you. It will feed the hungry world. Trust us. This is science-based. But it is based on bad science. It is based on a mechanistic, reductionistic science that believes that the whole life process is determined by genes. It's not. Genes do not determine. Now, this is from the Union of Concerned Scientists. This is what the kind of transgenic menu you might have soon. Appetizers, spiced potatoes with wax moth gene, juice of tomatoes with flounder gene, entree, blackened catfish with trout gene, pork chops with human gene, scalloped potatoes with chicken gene, cornbread with firefly gene, rice pudding with pea gene, milk with genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. Rah, rah, rah. Now, you can't see this slide, but it's a great picture. This is the life science industry now. The petrochemical, pharmaceutical, food industrial complex has merged now in this monopoly game to become the life science industry. They're controlling our food and our health. And it goes like this. Now, it was DuPont Nemours Chemical Company that put the money up for Harvard University to develop the Oncomouse, a genetically engineered mouse very susceptible to breast cancer. The patent is owned by the Board of Regents of Harvard University. This little mouse was developed to test ways of treating breast cancer and for screening possibly carcinogenic drugs and pollutants and so on. DuPont Nemours Chemical Company developed it. DuPont Nemours Chemical Company is one of the world's biggest distributors of agricultural pesticides that are linked with breast cancer. It also markets nationwide high-resolution X-ray film for mammograms. So this is the way the life science industry progresses. It contaminates the food chain and then profits when we get sick. The World Trade Organization is going to give this to the world. Now, all of you who followed NAFTA and GATT realize that what was going on in these Uruguay round and the trade negotiations and so on was market-driven. Now, I met with some authorities about genetically engineered bovine growth hormones saying, for ethical and scientific reasons, it should not be marketed. It should not be approved by the U.S. government. And I was told, the marketplace will be the arbiter of whether it's going to be used or not. The marketplace is where the final judgment rests. If it works, if it's profitable, it will be used. What a terrible situation to be in. And that is what drives the World Trade Organization. A market-driven ethos of a consumer mentality that is consuming the earth. It's got to stop. Side agreements that will be considered in the future, we were always told. Environmental concerns, social justice issues, animal welfare rights, protection, endangered species. That will be incorporated later. But we must get everything on the map first so that we can harmonize trade relationships and so on. These other bioethical issues have been totally ignored. So the whole system is corrupt. It will ultimately collapse into its own entropy. But it's going to take the world along with it. We have vast acreages now of transgenic crops, especially in the United States. One of the problems is genetic pollution, as you've already been told about, where the pollen will go from genetically engineered crops and contaminate conventional crops and organic crops. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of organically certified corn chips were taken off the shelves in Europe. They came out of a big organic producer in Texas because they were found to be contaminated with genetically engineered material. So we have the domino effect, and it's going to accelerate now with genetic pollution. The genes being transmitted via the pollen getting into the life stream. When a plant dies, you have what is called naked DNA. The cell disintegrates, and the DNA, the recombinant DNA in that cell, which is completely unique with, you know, various genes tagged on to a carrier virus and so on, can persist in certain soils and be absorbed by various microorganisms, including worms, and can then be incorporated into their genome, into their genetic structure. Model experiments have been done with mice. DNA can get across. Foreign DNA can get across from the mouse into the offspring through the milk and, of course, across the placenta. So this could lead to toxic bodies, contaminated ecosystems. Now, there is some genetic exchange going on all the time at a kind of regular, kind of humming rate. You know, we get infected with viruses. Maybe the viruses make us a little bit more intelligent or a little bit more stupid. But now, this whole rate of genetic exchange is being accelerated by this new technology. Where is the precautionary principle? Where is biological knowledge? It's been thrown out of the window. One of the first genetically engineered products to go onto the market was vegetarian rennet. Instead of taking the rennet from the stomachs of calves, it was genetically engineered. Then we had genetically engineered insulin. The gene is put into E. coli bacteria, and they ferment and mass-produce this stuff in vats. It's analogous, it's not homologous. One of the first vegetables to get on the market was the Flavor Saver tomato, but that just kind of squished into itself. People didn't like it. Last year, one of the biggest calamities was in the Mississippi Delta, where Monsanto's genetically engineered cotton just didn't do well, and Monsanto had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the cotton producers who were using their new transgenic cotton. It was an odd growing season. The bolls didn't ripen or they fell off prematurely. Now, there's a lot of research indicating with these transgenic plants, you're not sure how the genetic trait is going to be expressed. So there can be instability in each line. And there is no guarantee. The research is not done to show that you have genetic stability. So if you have a slightly drier or hotter or colder growing season, all kinds of weird things can happen to the plant. Tremendous economic loss. Suppose these were third world farmers, as in India. Are they going to get up and sue Monsanto? They're not going to be able to do that at all. You're just going to have more suicides, as Vandana Shiva and others will tell you. So we ask for labeling. We have transgenic potatoes that were being studied in the UK at the Rowett Research Institute, and it could be the lectins, a kind of insecticide in the potatoes, that when fed to rodents, the rodents' development was impaired, their immune systems were weakened, and so on. This is what blew everything up in the United Kingdom. The scientist was silenced and fired after mentioning this on the BBC. There's been a big inquiry now. Many scientists have come forward and confirmed the scientists' findings, that these are scientifically valid concerns, that the human population should not be a guinea pig for foods that we've never, ever eaten in the millions of years of our increasingly degenerate existence. Rapeseed or canola, a commodity oilseed crop grown primarily in Europe and Canada. Calgene is genetically engineering rapeseed to produce high-value specialty oils, which the plant doesn't normally take. Oils analogous to coconut and palm oil. How is this going to impact on third world economies, on countries and small communities that are dependent upon exporting these oils to us? There's no thought of that. Vanilla bean comes from Madagascar. It's a major economic cornerstone for that small community. It's possible for a laboratory in New Jersey to start synthesizing vanilla, genetically engineering it. What about the ethics of global trade here, where we start producing our own commodities in this country through genetic engineering, and to hell with the small producers abroad? Serious ethical questions that the World Trade Organization, of course, is not answering. Talk about the animals now. A few years ago, scientists put human growth genes into mice, and look at the difference. You had giant mice. Wow, if we can do that to mice, let's do it to pigs. Then we can have twice as many pigs growing twice as quickly, so we can eat twice as much. And that is efficiency, that is productivity, and that is what production agriculture is all about. So they did it. And there are some pretty serious problems in these confinement systems already. These are Auschwitz factories for animals. The animals are frustrated, bored, overcrowded, they are stressed, and they are distressed. Factory hog operations like this use a lot of antibiotics in the feed to control disease. And you know about the problems of antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria developing now. Don't forget that many of our genetically engineered crops now have antibiotic gene marker to identify that they've been genetically engineered. The British Medical Association came out in May saying that there should be a complete ban on all genetically engineered crops that contain antibiotic resistance markers. Farm animals are going to eat these crops. So are we. The genes for antibiotic resistance could be picked up by the bacteria in the farm animals' intestines and in ours, and that will be totally upsetting the apple cart. We could have new malabsorption diseases, more infections, and so on. But already these factory farms are causing foodborne plagues around the world where they are established, aside from the environmental pollution. E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria, Campylobacter, you name it, you'll get it if you eat it. And more power to Mother Nature. That's all I can say. Now, this is Dr. Vernon Purcell with one of his first transgenic pigs with human growth genes in her. Look at it. Look at the poor creature. Not even normal. Compacted bones. Crippled. A weakened immune system. Totally impaired. Now, when you compare the growth rates of a human being with a pig, the velocity of growth rate of a human pig far exceeds that of a human being. So where's the right thinking in the first place? If these scientists had got down on their hands and knees and looked eye to eye with a pig, in the normal posture of pigly humility, they would have realized that to put human growth genes into these animals would cause serious problems. And they're called deleterious pleiotropic effects. The simple target gene effect, like more growth, doesn't happen necessarily. All kinds of other things can happen. You screw up the immune system, growth becomes abnormal, you have kidney abnormalities, and the whole litany goes on. Scientists in Australia and New Zealand put... Australia, this was University of Adelaide in Australia. Of course, they're all sheep conscious there for various reasons. So they put human growth genes into sheep to try to get them bigger, faster. Same problem as with the pigs. Immune system breakdown. Most of the transgenic sheep died by the time they were 6 months of age. The arrogance of this, to improve on nature. Is it necessary? That's what I asked Vernon Purcell. Is this necessary? Why are you putting human genes into pigs, making them into humanimals? Well, we need to know, because this is knowledge. Knowledge for knowledge's sake. You know, that's the thing of science, of the new priesthood. But he also said, but it could be the way to feed the hungry world. I said, you sound like, what's her name, in the French Revolution, who said, Marie Antoinette, oh, they are rioting, they're hungry. They want bread. Oh, give them cake, she says. So Vernon Purcell is saying, give them pork. Just imagine the amount of soybean and corn and everything else to raise a pound of pork. Why not give people corn and soybeans? It's a balanced diet. Throw a few chilies in and a bit of spinach and you can fly to the moon on that. It's very sad. Now the laying hens and the broiler chickens, factory systems again. Endemic disease problems. One of the first transgenic to give virus immunity for foul leukemia disease, kind of cancer, viral cancer. Transgenic fish are being created now, genetically engineered fish. A kind of salmon has been engineered with such a growth velocity that it grows 400 times faster than normal. Instead of growing like that, it goes whoop, and then fills out. Immune system problems again. The physiology can't deal with this. Transgenic research, a bibliography, this is your government working for you. All your money's going out of your pocket into the research and development. Once your government or universities allied have done the research and development, then it goes into the private sector for commercialization. Major risk with transgenic fish is they're floating out in these things, you know, like the salmon and all the trout and stuff. And what happens if there's an escape? You know, we've polluted and just about overfished all the oceans, so what seals that are left are trying to get into these salmon and other fish-holding areas? Suppose some of these super salmon get out. So please think twice about eating seafood. You know, basically the ocean is... You wouldn't take food out of your toilet, and the sea is not the cleanest place, and a lot of the cultivated or aquacultured fish and other seafoods are heavily laced with all kinds of drugs, growth stimulants and so on, whether it's shrimp or trout. And the first animal foods that will be marketed will be genetically engineered seafoods. The Israelis trying to develop this broiler chicken through genetic engineering so that it doesn't have any feathers. The idea being, if it doesn't have any feathers, it's going to be cold, so it's going to want to eat more, so it'll get fatter quicker. They were so hysterical with this genetic change that they didn't thrive. This is selective breeding of the double muscle mass in the Belgian blue cattle. Look at all those steaks on those haunches, my. Now just imagine if you were the mother trying to give birth to one of these calves. That's the problem. So our Chamber of Commerce has patented the ski gene, which is a gene from chicken that related to tumor muscle mass, and they gene spliced it into the embryos of pigs and calves and so on to produce what they call Schwarzenegger animals, massive muscles. A mouse model of this has been developed too. The calves and the pigs that were supposedly to develop like this, to be huge lumps of meat, became crippled and died at a very young age from muscle atrophy degeneration. Some of the scientists said, well, this is a very good model for neurological muscle diseases in human beings, you know. Let's try and pump some medical value out of it. Totally insane. But a lot of scientific publications come out of it. So you get your tenure. The cow of the future could look like this, just a mindless creature. Maybe it might be good. She's not suffering anymore. Legless, just a milk machine. But that's the attitude. One of the earlier hearings where I testified before Congress on genetic engineering, Thomas Wagner, a veterinarian like myself, who was doing genetically engineering of farm animals, said to Congress that a cow is nothing more than cells on the hoof. A cow is nothing more than cells on the hoof. Homo technos, tripping along. Very disturbing state of mind. So keep reflecting on this. What's the motive behind this technology? What's the state of mind? I believe it's a state of mind that is pathogenic. It's another form of insanity, far more serious than the neuroses and psychoses that we share in this room. I testified too before the FDA about the approval of recombinant DNA bovine growth hormone. Our government was hell-bent on getting this out. I don't know how much Monsanto paid to get it through, but they did. As you know, the World Trade Organization is trying to shove this down the throats of Europe, and Europe is saying no. The Canadian government said no after rumors of being bribed. Two officials leaked out that they were offered a couple of $1 million to get it quickly approved on the fast track. Canadian government turned it down on the basis of it's not good for cows. And that was part of my testimony. It makes cows sick. Super cows are already suffering from production-related diseases. This is going to be a turn of the screw, and they're going to burn out. Instead of burning out at about 3 years of age, they'll be gone probably after the first or second lactation. Pretty bad. Pretty bad. There's an insulin growth factor, and I think it's 20 to 30% of our milk in this country, and especially the processed dairy foods, will contain some of the secretions from these injected cows. And there's a higher level of insulin-like growth factor in the milk of cows treated with genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. We know that in people who are susceptible to breast cancer and prostate cancer, they have higher levels of insulin-like growth factor. So put two and two together, you shouldn't be marketing this stuff unless you want to increase the incidence of breast and prostate cancer. But of course we do, because then we can profit from treating people when they have breast and prostate cancer. It makes the money wheels turn, and we'll do more animal research in the process. This is brilliant. This is brilliant strategy for making profits at the expense of life. It's not a life science industry, it's a death science industry. It's a death science industry. And in the interim, it profits from suffering. These are the huge factories. This is a big feedlot in Colorado, Montford. They have about, 10,000 cattle. This technology is being used to enhance the production of feedstuffs for livestock, vaccines and production-boosting hormones and so on. And we know that with high animal fat and protein consumption, we're getting more breast and colon cancer. A lot of milk you drink, you get more osteoporosis, arteriosclerosis, heart attack, kidney disease, gallbladder disease, and so on. A lot of nice stuff. So, what to do? Well, people need new hearts and livers and kidneys and so on. So let's genetically engineer pigs. And they're producing pigs now that have human immunocomplement spliced into their genes, which makes their organ surfaces react in our bodies as though they're kind of human. We're still going to be on immunosuppressive drugs for a while. That's going to make us susceptible to various diseases. But if we need a new heart, and it could be a pig's heart, or if we need a new liver, could be a pig's liver. That could extend our lives a little bit longer. Maybe. But it's going to cause tremendous profits if you've got the cash to invest in that and sell it. And this is what they're doing. Genetically engineered pigs now so that we can put pigs' hearts into human beings. Now, coming from England, we used to have stories about Richard the Lionheart. But what about Peter the Pigheart? You know, we're going to have a new legions of psychotherapists now. You know, we had Peter Lorre with the hand. Well, what's it like to have a pig heart or pig liver? I don't know. The psychic effects could be very interesting. But joking aside, the real concern is that pigs have retroviruses in their systems. And those retroviruses could do pretty wild things in our bodies. So that somebody with walking Peter with the pig heart could be an epidemic time bomb with pig retroviruses in his system that could mutate or recombine with other organisms in his body, and we'll have a nice reduction in the human population. Yes? Yeah, they're going to say there's going to be humane killing and so on. And people have been put online with these transgenic pig livers already in 2 or 3 hospitals in the U.S. While the medical authorities in Europe have said moratorium with xenotransplants is too serious. Europe is a little bit less market-driven than the U.S. But I really am proud to be British for once. In spite of our embarrassing colonial legacy and all of that, because we have stood very firm in the face of this onslaught from the U.S. government industrial complex to accept transgenic crops. Now, as a veterinarian with an imagination, I'm not sure if it's a fertile or a moral imagination, but I honestly haven't read too much science fiction, but it really slapped me home when they started creating animals with human genes that are going to be producing pharmaceuticals in their milk to deal with various genetically inherited abnormalities in human beings. Now, from a medical viewpoint, it's only about 2% of human disorders that have a hereditary base. The cost effectiveness of providing these medicines taken from the animal's milk and possibly soon also from their urine, the profits might be very, very significant, but for a very small, if not affluent, sector of society. It's not going to do anything about the major killers of human beings, diarrhea, pneumonia, malnutrition, and so on. It's for a very elite few, rather like the xenotransplants that are being put into poor people first because they're the guinea pigs. But turning animals into pharmaceutical factories, they call them biomachines, they call them bioreactors. And it's coming of age now. Whoops, we'll skip that. It's a very curious business because, again, problems of purification. There are possibly viruses in the milk. What about prion disease, the mad cow disease? You know, it was one of the greatest tragedies of this century. It was the hundreds of thousands of cows that were killed in England because we were feeding dead cows and sheep to live cows. Efficient recycling. Biologically totally inappropriate. And that's how the prion disease spread and created mad cow disease, possibly exacerbated by organochloride or organophosphate pesticides. We're not sure yet. So the Brits had a wake-up call with mad cow disease. And that's what Glickman says, oh, they're just food paranoid now. He either says, well, British resistance to transgenic foods is protectionism. That's the immediate knee-jerk reaction. Oh, it's just protectionism. To hell with science and precautionary principle and so on. Or else it's a kind of food paranoia. But I feel a need just to work out some kind of vindication, if not justification, for the suffering and needless slaughter of all these beautiful cattle, many from wonderful herds that farmers in England have spent generations to build up, and they were all wiped out For what purpose? Perhaps to stop biotechnology. Because the prions we knew nothing about. And when you get the prions in your system, and I've spoken to some young English kids who were eating hamburgers at the time, they feel that they're walking time bombs now. They don't know when they're going to go down with Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease and their brain is going to turn into the cerebral equivalent of Swiss cheese. It's not very nice. That perhaps is a vindicating wake-up call. We must follow natural law. We must be obedient to the ways of nature, to common sense, to ecology, and to a truly sustainable way of living. But turning animals into these machines now, we can, as I said earlier, produce vaccines and peptides and medicines with genetically engineered organisms and crops. These are sheep that contain a human protein in Scotland that will help kids with cystic fibrosis and victims of hemophilia. Now the rapid way of multiplying more of these transgenics is to clone them. But there's a big problem with cloning. You heard about the sheep Dolly that was cloned. Meghan Morag, they have absolutely no differences. Meg, Morag, Dolly, the clones are coming out now. There are plans for the Scottish Research Institute to establish a large flock in New Zealand of cloned sheep to start producing pharmaceuticals. But one thing is working against them, several things. Many clones don't develop normally. You know, a clone is when you take a cell, I take one of your cells, and I put it in the egg of a cow. I suck the inside of the egg out, it's just in the egg shell, and then I put it back into the cow. What's going to develop there? A facsimile of you. That's already been done. Humans have been cloned in this way. You can clone that cow by taking the egg and taking a cell out of the ear or whatever, wherever and put it in. And the inside lining of that little ovum shell triggers a body cell to turn into a multipotential embryo. It's extraordinary. But that embryo will be the same age as the cell, in other words, the same age as you. So if you're 35, you will give, your clone will be 35 too, so what's the advantage? Many of these cloned embryos have an incredible amount of fluid around them when they're born. They're much larger than normal, so they're difficult for the cows and the sheep to give birth to. And they often have multiple defects because the genetic mix of mother-father is not in the right kind of balance in these clones. Everything's off. So it is probably a technology that's going to fail. But another backup technology is the creation of transgenic mice. Knockout mice with various gene arrays removed or abnormal genes put in. Thousands and thousands and thousands of varieties of mice now are being created. What for? For screening new drugs? For testing new medicines? This is one poor mouse with elephant man's disease. Neurofibromatosis. We can say, well, these are only mice, it doesn't matter. But it does matter. These are living sentient beings. And we're using a lot of resources creating and patenting these animals. And to what end? Is it going to lead to good medicine? What is good medicine? Good medicine is clean air, clean food, clean water, and good relationships. No cures here. Europe tried to block the oncomouse and other patents. So I'm going to move on now. So now we're playing God. The scientific priesthood, just to wrap up, the structure of the DNA molecule in the slice electron micrograph, that's your DNA molecule. It's like the window in Chartres Cathedral. It's the sacred symmetry, the Sri Yantra of all creation. It's the fingerprint of the Creator. It's God's thumbprint. The integrity and future of creation is at risk now, thanks to the World Trashing Organization. The great Jesuit priest, paleontologist Teilhard de Chardin said in the 1950s, we're rapidly approaching the point in our biological evolution where we will have one final choice, and that will be between suicide or adoration. suicide or adoration. Adoration meaning reverence. Reverence for a species that I call Homo pansapiens. Suicide for the mutant form Homo biotechnos. So we have to fight. It is survival. It is the survival of everything that makes us human. To have reverence for life, to have compassion, not to commoditize life, not to see life, nature, as a resource, not to see animals as things, but as hierophanies, as Eliade would say, as interlocutors, as beings of revelation, of divine manifestation, like St. Francis of Assisi would say. It is by way of the animals and through nature that we realize divinity, because divinity is not simply transcendent. Divinity is omnipresent. Divinity is in all things. That's not pantheism, that's called panentheism. All is in God, and God is in all. So what in God's name is biotechnology going to do? To the creative manifestation of life, to the balance and the harmony. If you believe in reincarnation, what's it going to do? I discussed this with a few Hindus, and they just shake their heads in bewilderment. But we're going to improve the human being through engineering and develop even better weapons of self-elimination. But I try to be optimistic. Biotechnology is forcing us to think in a different way, in a whole new paradigm, a more holistic vision, not only of our powers and where they're going, the kind of consequential ethics, but making us think in a very different way. We are part of the earth. The genes can be exchanged. We're all part of the one life. If we can put plant genes into animals, you know, genes from spiders are being put into goats to produce silk in the milk, because silk is incredibly strong material that can be used for military bulletproof jackets. Think of that. But we can switch these genes around. This indicates that we're all kind of connected at a biomolecular level, but also we're connected at a spiritual level. In between, we have to put in the ethics so that we are in our right minds again. And the best thing that we can do, the best revolution, because although we have freedom of speech in this country, it's not what comes out of our mouths that counts, it's what we choose to put into our mouths, is to eat with conscience. The boomerang of biotechnology, of agricultural biotechnology food, is going to create an increasing public demand for certified organic foods. And that's the way it's going to go. And you know just what happened there. Some of my colleagues were working on the National Organic Standards. USDA moves in, tries to do a little bit of soft shoe work to get biotechnology under the organic umbrella. Because after all, genes are natural, they're all part of the creative process. Great logic. Great logic. And the USDA received 280,000 letters. And they backed off. 280,000, many from Europe and the Third World Network. And they stopped in their tracks. We do have power. It's the power of the plate, the power of the fork, and the power of the truth that we live by. Mahatma Gandhi called it Satyagraha, the power of truth in action. If you have nothing to die for, you have nothing to believe in. Once you get your beliefs straight, to really fight for truth, for justice, for eco-justice, for social justice, and to preserve the beauty and integrity of creation, you have no fear. There is nothing to fear except, as the cliche says, fear itself. Be true to yourself. And this is a good fight. I was just in England to visit my elderly mother and went there for some agricultural conferences with some good moving groups, Compassion and World Farming and the Agriculture and Food Society, both radically opposed to all this biotech stuff. Went in to get my mother some food, picked up some smoked tofu. She said, "What's that?" "You wait and see." And look, it says GM free in the top corner. GM is the legal term, genetically modified. It should be GE for genetically engineered, because all crops are genetically modified through selective breeding. GM, the labels are out. The moratorium is on the way. People in the US, surveyed in 1987 about genetic engineering, we shouldn't interfere with or tamper with nature. 35%, the majority of people, don't like it. But a lot of these surveys have been suppressed. Americans don't want this. So just to close, our task, you know, is to define what it means to be human. Human, humane, humus, humility. What is our place on earth? To consume it, a last, final, convulsive, global suck? Or to dress and to keep the Garden of Eden? To restore it? I think the path is very clear for all of us in this room. Our work is cut out for us. We follow the power of truth in action. We engage in all kinds of activities, obedient and civilly disobedient, until those people who are not connected with the earth anymore begin to see the light. If they don't see the light, it doesn't really matter. They will eventually. They'll keep coming around and coming around and coming around until they get it right. But the extinction process is pushing us. Remember, suicide or adoration. And I know what my choice is. And I know what yours is too. So help others make the enlightened choice. Eat with conscience and just let things be. Thank you.
We're going to take 15 minutes of questions. Did you have something?
Yeah. Questions, and could we pop the lights on, please? Just let me quickly scan the notes here, see if I missed anything. Oh, yeah, I don't know whether... I'm sorry I came in late on your wonderful talk, but this whole issue of biopiracy that's going on, the transnational corporations going and gene prospecting, you know, they've given India and other third world countries, I think, what, 3 more years... to patent all their seeds and native medicines and so on, to put world patents on them, otherwise it'll be a free-for-all. And how can poor countries get all of that together in that time? So biopiracy is a major issue. And this is the other dark side of this biotechnology. It is a major threat to biodiversity and to cultural diversity. Cultural diversity in agricultural practices, in traditions, and all of the things that enrich the human experience. Yeah, okay, yes. Seeds of Change, yes.
They just sold their company to Mars.
I know. Well, Mars monopolizes the European pet food industry, so they're very diversified. Now, some of these corporations will keep the integrity of their satellite corporations that they buy up. And we are hoping that Seeds for Change will not become contaminated with greed or start selling genetically engineered seeds. Otherwise, the whole thing is lost. And this is becoming an increasing problem for organic farmers, just to find regular certified seed. So... it's very serious. The heirloom seeds, there are networks for this, but the Seed Savers was really one of the best, and it is a great concern to us all. Yes, ma'am, in the back, blue, yeah. Yeah. University of Seoul in Korea have cloned human beings up to like the sixth, up to about an 8-cell stage. They've done the cloning, and then they killed. You know, a few years before, in the U.S., they've produced hamsters. They fused the developing egg of a hamster and a human being together and produced it to about a 16 or 32-cell stage. and some pretty weird things going on. The next threshold so that we can have organ parts for humans is to make a clone of a human and put it through some accelerated embryological development, possibly in the egg of a cow, and then birth it and keep it alive, but it would be headless. And they've already developed a technology to produce headless tadpoles, so if we can produce headless human beings, each person would have their own organ bank available as needed. Now, my concern as a veterinarian, I said, you know, thinking of the future, moral imagination, whatever, when we have these cows and other animals producing pharmaceuticals for us, you could almost imagine 1,000 years' time that I do house calls, not to treat people's companion animals, but to go and treat their medical surrogates. And you have this animal form kind of grafted onto the person, providing various pharmaceuticals and biologics that for various genetic metabolic reasons, because we've become so degenerate, this surrogate creature is needed. Very bizarre. But don't forget, because of the E. coli and all the contamination of our meat now, the government's answer to this is going to be to eradicate it. So some of the organic farmers call this mummified food industry, but we don't know how it's going to affect us genetically, increasing the rate of mutation and metabolic pathology. Gentlemen in the green, colorful, yes? Well, the last reading I had was not so long ago in Europe, where two humpback whales beached off the coast of Belgium, I think it was, and a pet food company wanted to get the okay from the government that they could use meat in pet food. And the government analyzed it and said that the tissues of the whales was equivalent to toxic waste. So I think this is the main problem. You know, the whales, especially in the blubber, any organism that is fat accumulates dioxins. The pesticides are lipophilic, so they go to fat in the body, and especially to the brain. So fat is part of most of our bodies. And it's the same with the animals. So immune-mediated diseases are then affected because the dioxins also jam the immune system and act as so-called xenoestrogens. They have the regulatory functions of the body are impaired by these industrial pollutants as well, that come especially from burning plastics and certain pesticides. The dioxin is one of the nastiest. So I would look at that. Now, the veterinarian or the pathologist might say, well, it's dying of a new virus, but the virus is a symptom. We're dealing with a whole cascade effect of anthropogenic or human-caused problems for marine mammals. It's a great tragedy. Penguins have been dying off the coast of New Zealand from a virus caught from broiler chickens. How do they get it from broiler chickens? You know, they're out in the ocean. The broiler chicken waste, carcasses and so on were being dumped in the ocean, and the birds were eating this. They found canine distemper in dolphins and seals because dead dogs have been dumped into the ocean. You know, it's just going on and on. It is really an open toilet. It's tragic. Yeah. Depressing, but we can turn it around. It's amazing how resilient some of these organisms are. One of the worst stories for the pollution is because of the air currents. We have pesticide rain now, and a lot of industrial chemicals are being dumped in the Arctic, and this is accumulating in the milk of Eskimo and northern women. So the kids have more middle ear disease problems. They're finding high levels of dioxin, attention deficit disorders, lower IQs, and so on. And cetaceans like the minke whale, they have, I think, 14,000 times fold higher level of dioxin than is allowed in our foods in this country. 2 years ago, the French authorities nearly pulled off all the cheeses from the shelves because of high dioxin levels. They were about 10 picograms just below the withdrawal level that's mandated under EC law. So we really have to look at these other aspects of pollution. Genetic pollution is just going to be the kind of icing on top of the sickening cake. Yes, sir. the best data came out of the U.S. that I mentioned in my book, Eating with Conscience, that studies were done, I think, it might have been Seventh-day Adventist Hospital, but they looked at the milk of vegetarian women and meat-eating women and found that the vegetarian women, the vegans, had much lower levels of dioxin in the milk. So the recommendation is, if you're a nursing mother, be vegan and buy organic. Thanks. Okay.
We invite you to join with other concerned members of civil society in their demonstrations against the World Trade Organization in Seattle from November 29th to December 3rd. People from all across America and around the world are coming to Seattle to oppose the anti-democratic WTO during its secret closed-door trade negotiations. For more information on the demonstrations, talks, and workshops held by civil society during the WTO negotiations, please call 1-877-STOP-WTO or visit the websites www.peopleforfairtrade.org and www.seattlewto.org.